From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour will be made this coming Saturday, March 4th, at the Liberty Pole in Rochester, 2 p.m. That's when the People's March for Education Justice will begin. Now, last week on this program, we had a conversation about how suburban schools are impacted by New York State's hotly debated education funding formula. That prompted a number of emails from parents in the city, people connected to the Rochester district, and they just wanted us to make sure we also understand how this issue impacts kids in Rochester. And that's what we're going to do this hour. Now, maybe you're one of our listeners from last week who expressed concern that New York already spends too much on education. Our state spends 87% more than the national average, according to Joe Spector, a reporter for Gannett Albany. But there are huge disparities. Districts with higher rates of poverty can spend between $10,000 and $20,000 per pupil, if you want to use that stat. Wealthier districts can spend more than double that, way more than double that. And we're going to talk about what equity really means and what it could mean for students in Rochester. Let me go ahead and welcome my guests for the hour. Eamon Scanlon is lead education organizer for Metro Justice and the Alliance for Quality Education in Rochester. Eamon, welcome back to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Evan.
Pia Moeller is a parent of a student at school 53, is that right?
That's correct.
How old?
He is a kindergartner.
He's a kindergartner. Yeah. Great age, isn't it?
It is.
Thank you for being here. Juan Callado is a high school student and a member of Metro Justice and Special Parents Special Kids. Juan, welcome to you.
Thank you, and thank you for the invitation.
You got it. And Jacarl Hill is a graduate of the Rochester City School District and a youth organizer at Teen Empowerment. Jacarl, welcome to you.
Thank you.
I'm going to start with you, Eamon. You know, and you kind of heard the background there, but you got a big day coming up on Saturday. It's a significant issue. What does equity really mean in this context to you?
So equity is about meeting the actual needs of the students versus this idea that if we treated all students equally across communities, across levels of poverty and other challenges, that would be enough. So we're at two problems here. We do not treat everybody equally, and even if we did, you would actually need more resources to tackle the high needs that we have in Rochester.
All right, so goal number one is not we want every district to spend the same on every kid.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So go ahead.
Yeah. So what would make more sense is to have a framework where whatever the needs of the children were to guarantee their right to an education would be available to them. And so if you look at a district like Rochester, people often, the critics will say, well, you're already spending too much money. That doesn't address the deep underlying problems that the district faces with having such a high population of students who have disabilities, which are very costly to educate, have students who are learning English, and many students who are homeless and suffering from severe trauma and other issues at home. So the services and the things that you would need for those students are vast, when often what we see is the schools are very poorly resourced, so we go the opposite direction.
Okay. Jacarl, you graduated from the Rochester City School District when?
I graduated 2 years ago in 2015.
You graduated early?
Yes.
Congratulations to
Thank you.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good, actually. Thanks for asking.
Well, and one of the things that Jacarl's here to talk about is how you see resources impacting students like you. You're coming up through the district, wanting to graduate. How do you view this? What's the issue with resources in your mind?
Well, in my mind, it's kind of like a lot of things are like put in place that shouldn't be there, and it's a lot of things that's lacking, like counselors and stuff. Like for especially from where I live at, and like in the Genesee area, a lot of trauma and whatnot. And it's not like a lot of counselors or people that have like good people skills and communication skills within schools where students can get help so that they can actually focus on the work. Because when you're going through so much at home, just because you walk into the school, walk into new doors, doesn't mean that everything leaves you. You know, so dealing with that and then trying to balance the education. And then some people they grow up sooner than they have to. They have to take care of themselves and their families. And it just like a lot of things like don't really help you with that. You know what I'm saying? One, being belittled when you come into schools. Like I said, not having counselors, and then like being suspended for like lashing out. But sometimes you lashing out because you're not getting the respect that you deserve because people don't understand everything that's really going on and whatnot. You know what I'm saying? So the resources that they're getting, they're not utilizing to really help and assist, like boost education, you know what I'm saying, and build a healthy environment.
So what Jacarl is describing is, I think, illustrative of what Eamon Scanlon was just saying, which is that if your goal is the same amount of education funding for every district, you may fall short for students who grow up with trauma. And we know students who grow up in poverty, not universally, but more likely to have trauma at home. Is that just an example of what you're talking about, Eamon?
Yeah, and if you are growing up in poverty, there's just a lot of other factors in the community. Some could be trauma, but there are other things that people suffer from, you know, lack of transportation, issues with getting to school, issues with materials. Some schools have uniforms that the parents cannot afford. I mean, there's a lot of things that come into this. And it's not just, you know, urban. We're speaking very much about RCSD, but if you were to look at the poverty rates throughout Monroe County, you could pretty much graph out test scores and poverty rates by the districts. And so many of the very rural districts in Monroe County that suffer from high rates of poverty see the same challenges, but in a different context.
Jacarl, let me just follow up with you a little bit. You talked about the importance of counselors, the importance of having people employed by the district who can handle those difficult moments, because a student may arrive at school and you're carrying problems from home. You may be carrying problems of trauma. What did you see around you? Did you have friends or peers who struggled with that, maybe didn't finish school or struggled with tests because of all that?
Yeah, even myself, like going to schools, you know what I'm saying, with my parents like working but not really making enough, it was kind of like a lot of times I would go to school hungry, and if you don't want to eat school lunch because it's horrible, you know what I'm saying? You're kind of like sitting there trying to focus on work, but you got stomach pains and whatnot. So you're trying to figure out like how I'm going to get my next meal and whatnot, instead of worrying about like studying for a test. Or like my brother, like it kind of took him a while to graduate because he was going through a lot of stuff, you know what I'm saying? Even the school to prison pipeline, he ended up going to jail, but getting out of jail, you know what I'm saying? Still graduating and whatnot. So it's a lot of times where like people struggle with that. And when they don't have, like, no forms of help, because at the same time that he's trying to do something, his family is trying to do something to worry about him as well, it's just, like, as a collective, just, like, detrimental. You know what I'm saying? So it's really no progress being made. So I have seen it. I've seen it with other people as well. So, like I said, with the not just trauma, like you said, poverty and whatnot, and there's just stuff that goes around you in the environment as a whole.
How were you able to deal with that when you would be hungry, when you would be dealing with that kind of stuff? How did you find a way to kind of push through that?
I kind of found it in my own will, because my mom, she would just tell me, like, it's a lot of stuff that you're going through, but at the end of the day, you know what I'm saying, what you're doing, you like being like one of the first people in our family to graduate, you're going to have like a brighter future than a lot of us had. And while like we sitting here struggling, like one day you're going to be able to take care of us if you keep like going on the path that you're going to. So just having the motivation to be like, I'm going through a lot, but at the end of it, like what I'm going to get is going to be enough. You know what I'm saying? Really, that's all I had to go on for many a days. And apparently that was enough for me. You know what I'm saying?
How's your brother doing?
My brother's doing good, actually. He graduated. He just got him a new job and whatnot, so he's definitely doing a lot of things.
Was it hard to see him struggle?
Yeah, it definitely was, because they looked up to me, like me graduating early. They were like, oh, I want to be like you, even though he's my older brother. It was just like, I want to be like you. You're doing all this. You're making all these moves and whatnot. So, you know what I'm saying, just being a role model to somebody and then, like, kind of lifting them up to motivate them to go back to school and then finish it and cross the stage and just look at me like, I did it because of you. So it was a good feeling. So.
Walking into this building, we met Jacarl before the program, and Sean Brown from Teen Empowerment has become a friend. Yeah. He had such good things to say about you. And I'm glad you're doing well, but I think this is a good illustration for just, you know, sort of the kinds of challenges that RCSD may have. And as we continue this conversation, we'll work into what are the real needs? Are there numbers on it? Are there goals? What are lawmakers saying? These are all things we're going to be working through. Let me turn to Pia Moeller, who's a parent of a kindergartner at School 53. And you're here working on this issue. Why, Pia?
I'm obviously invested as a parent of a child in the city school district, and I'm also, I think, more broadly dedicated to it because I believe in social justice, and I know that education equity is key to that. So those are my two main sources of motivation. I'm an active parent in my child's school. I volunteer in the classroom regularly, and I also am active in the PTA. And what I see is a lot of dedicated staff, a lot of dedicated teachers, very qualified. And my kid's school has a lot going for it. It's a school in very good standing. But it nonetheless also suffers from the lack of funding that, you know, falls on the city district as a whole. So there are lots of things that my child's school cannot offer the children and the families that they really need. So,
for example?
For example, right now we have, I think, two after-school programs, and they're very limited. So we have a school of several hundred kids, and that's the extent of our after-school program. Our school ends at 2 o'clock. Parents have to figure out what to do with children after 2 o'clock, right? And it's a K through sixth grade school. So what we would really love to see is a big expansion of after-school programs and clubs that would give our children the kinds of opportunities that they currently don't have, and that I imagine that Jakal may not have had in his school, right? We know that these programs are very few and far apart in the city district, because they really have, with the funding that they have to focus on the bare necessities, right? And so they do some of those things well in my kids' school in terms of keeping class sizes small and having a teacher's aide. Those are really important things. But then we don't have any of the extracurricular activities that make school fun, first of all, for kids, right? Make children want to come to school and enjoy being in school and stay in school. But there are also activities that enable the children to learn a whole set of character building skills that, you know, regular academics don't. Leadership skills, self-confidence, perseverance, and using your imagination, learning self-expression, right? Those are some of the things that you learn in those programs. And many, many children are denied of those opportunities right now.
All right, let me turn to Juan Callado, who's a high school student. A student where, Juan?
I'm a student right now in Monroe Bosis One, O'Connor Academy.
Okay. And why don't you tell me how you view this issue? How do you think it's impacting you and other students?
First, I will go back in time. 3 years ago, I was in East High School. And I can say because of funding, we don't have a small class size. Our classes there in East High School are around 30 to 25 students, or sometimes more. Because of that, I didn't learn too much in East High School. I was always out of the classes, main office. I go on Mondays and Friday. I was like coming back from OSS, that is our school suspension. And that didn't help me too much learn. Even in that, in East High School, then right now, they don't have the funding. Even right now, my brother is passing from the same thing than me. 3 days ago, we received a letter from the school from my brother. Then he's kicked out of school. He haven't learned anything from school because we don't have the funding and help for him. He got just one teacher in one room for a lot of students, around 40 to 30 students they have right now in one room, and just one teacher. That person have to take care of all those students. He was raising his hand. The teacher can't explain it to him because he got all the other students with the same thing. And he was really frustrated. He just walked out of the room and he gets suspended. Part of it, that's why we need the funding. And we need all the money like that we can have more teachers, more social workers, counselors. Because even in our school, we have one counselor for 1,000 of students. The same thing with bilingual programs. We don't have bilingual programs. We don't have too much bilingual people in school like that. The parents can communicate with schools. Then that's why it's the reason that I'm walking to on March 4, and I invite all the people who's listening to this on March 4 to be in One Liberty Pole Way in Rochester, New York. And we gotta be marching from 2 o'clock to 4. And that's why I'm marching, and I will be there too, because of this, and because I believe in public schools. I believe that we need more people graduating. And I know that the Rochester City School District can graduate students. It's not just that they can't. They can. It's because they can, but they need that money. They need that funding. Like that, they can graduate those students, and they can have a better future.
All right, so listeners, again, you heard Juan just mention Saturday, 2 p.m. at the Liberty Pole in Rochester. It is the March for, let me let Eamon Scanlon tell you again, not only what's coming up on Saturday, but what you hope to come out of Saturday, Eamon.
So Saturday is the People's March for Education Justice. If you want more information, you can go to our website. It's at www.metrojustice.org, and it's right on the splash page there. So that'll be taking place at 2 p.m., like Juan said, at Liberty Pole downtown. And the point of that march is part of a broader movement, a feeling that people have that public education is under attack. And a lot of what we're talking about here today, it stems from an issue of underfunding. that goes back decades. And it's rooted deeply in this issue of equity, and it expands to a lot of other challenges that we face. Jakarl was talking about the school-to-prison pipeline. Juan suffered from being suspended upwards of about 6 months out of one school year because he didn't have bilingual teachers who could understand him and his frustrations. So there's a lot of overlapping issues here in terms of how students are being deprived of a quality education. And we want to unite under this banner to make sure that the governor and the state legislature step up and fully fund schools in a way that is equitable. And just to say really briefly, that's what's called foundation aid. There's a formula that distributes money to schools based on their need, which is what we're advocating here right now. And the mandate has over $180 million that is owed to Monroe County as a whole.
Over the roughly the last 10 years?
Yep. The court case was settled 10 years ago, and 10 years later, where we are now in 2017, so going into our 11th year, we still don't have the resources that were promised as a result of that court case.
And so you're, again, before I get to your phone calls here, Eamon, the ask is to just restore that money, and how much would that be for RCSD, for example?
So RCSD, I believe it's a little over $90 million. They keep updating these because it's been so long that the number moves with inflation. So we've waited so long that this is like a moving target. And but right now it's roughly $90 million that is owed to the RCSD district. And if that money were to be implemented in a two-year phase-in, it could have a real impact.
Realistically, though, I think, I don't want to speak for the governor's office, I don't want to speak for state lawmakers, but they may say, look, 10 years ago is when the recession started, the financial crash hit, that foundation aid formula was there, we did the best we could for several years, then we got back on board, we're doing the best we can now, we've got to let that go. What do you say to that?
So that's completely the wrong approach to take, right? We can't just let go on poverty, on communities of color, on rural communities, right? This is decades of leaving behind people that deserve real equity. So it shouldn't be about political priorities. It should be about economic and racial justice. And if we're serious about that, if the governor wants to take a position different from what the Trump administration has laid out and what a lot of people are fearing right now, you need to stand up and actually fund schools at a level that would allow every student to succeed.
All right, listeners, if you want to call and weigh in on this discussion, it's 844-295-TALK, toll-free, 844-295-8255. Or if you're in Rochester, 263-WXXI, it's 263-9994. John in Rochester is first. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. Yeah, you know, what's getting lost here, the taxpayers are maxed out. So I've got a suggestion. You got some young panelists there, some students and some parents. You know, the one thing that's not being talked about here is the mob called these education unions. We've got all kinds of state, federal, and local labor laws that protect workers. There's no need to have this mob called the education unions in this state who, if you look at comparable jobs, whether it's clerical, teaching, whatever, the benefits and wages far outnumber comparable jobs in the private sector. So get rid of the unions, and you students there are being brainwashed by the education unions in thinking that's not part of the problem. So that's my contribution. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
John, thanks for the phone call. Eamon, I'll start with you. I know you've heard this a lot. Go ahead.
Yeah, so that is a huge misconception. Some of the most heavily unionized states in the union have some of the best schools, like Massachusetts and Connecticut. Some of the worst public education systems are in right-to-work states, like Mississippi or South Carolina. So the idea that getting rid of
right-to-work just means dismiss at will, right?
Yeah, right-to-work basically undercuts the ability to form a union because you cannot collectively bargain under that framework.
Sure, yeah, and I don't think that's controversial. I'm just trying to clarify.
But
go ahead.
Yeah. So yeah, just in case anybody doesn't know, so in those states, they are prevented from forming teachers' unions, but we don't see great levels of achievement because of it. So that's a myth. And the second thing is about this idea of taxpayers being tapped out. Part of that is the structural inequality that we have in the state, where local funds make up such a big proportion of funding schools. That's part of the reason we have so much inequity. So often a wealthy taxpayer is paying actually a lower or comparable rate on their house because they have so much more wealth. So we've talked about this a bit, and not to get too mathy here, but if your home is worth $1 million and you're doing a 1% tax on that house, it's not going to generate as much revenue as a 10% tax on a $50,000 home, right? So what often happens is in wealthy communities, they're not paying their fair share into a system that would then equalize against us. And so in poorer communities like Rochester, where a lot of housing values are really low, we can't raise funds to be on par with a Pittsford or a Brighton or a Penfield.
When it comes to his concern that because of unions, the benefits and everything related to their bargaining is better than the private sector, and that that's a good way to trim costs. What do you say to that, Eamon?
I think that teaching is a noble profession, and it should not be something that is undervalued and underfunded either. So we should make it a more attractive position. Right now, we have a teacher shortage in New York State, and the more attacks we have on that profession, the harder it is to find people who are willing to give their lives to help inspire and educate students.
Let me ask the parent, Pia, who is also here as well. You know, what do you think of John's phone call? He's concerned just about leaving unions out of the conversation, and he's concerned about his tax dollars already being stretched. You're a taxpayer too. What do you say to John?
Well, I certainly don't feel that my taxes are going the wrong places if they're going to public education. I think that other than healthcare, I can't think of anything that should take priority to that. But the other thing that comes to mind is that I moved to Rochester in last summer. So this is my first year here, and I moved here from the state of Wisconsin, which does have the right to dismiss. You know, that is a very anti-union state, and teachers' bargaining, collective bargaining rights were severely compromised with Governor Scott Walker's budget 10, I believe it was called. And what you saw there was teachers leaving in droves, public schools, right? And so you're already talking in New York State about a teacher shortage. It's much more serious there. And I think that should be our concern. We want to attract the best teachers. We want them to be highly qualified, and we want to reward them. I don't think that any teachers, you know, that teachers as a class of employees are currently receiving anything they haven't deserved. Quite to the contrary.
All right, let me go to Tim in Pittsford next on the phone. Go ahead, Tim.
I'm just to preface this. I wish we could spend $50,000 on kids in the city school district. I'm sincere when I say that, but it is not realistic. And John is a regular caller. He obviously leans pretty far to the right, and I lean to the left. But he is not wrong when he says that we are almost tapped out in the state. We have a net loss of people coming in due to many reasons, but taxes. We have baby boomers that are retiring and leaving the state. I am in the Pittsford School District. My house is definitely not a million-dollar house. I've been very open and honest on the show before that me and my wife's taxes are $10,500 a year, which is literally, it's the definition of insanity every time that bill comes up every year. We pay it and expect different outcomes, but it's not happening. And when I was a kid, these kids' age, I don't know if I definitely would not have understand how taxes work like this, but funding is coming from taxes. And it's not like Pittsford is going to say, well, let's shave $1,000 off each kid so we can give more to the city school district. Even if we funded the city school district more, it's not going to reduce anyone else. It's going to end up meaning, it's going to mean higher taxes for everyone. And I'm not saying that higher taxes are the worst thing. They kind of are in this area only because we are, if not the top, we are in the top 10 every year in amount of taxes paid out, and that is not a good thing to be in the top 10. So it's almost like squeezing blood from a stone. It's easy to say the people out in Pittsford should be paying more, but I almost want to have people come to live with me for a week and see what it's really like. I mean, I get the extreme. I get that Pittsford is a very wealthy district. I know that, but, you know, I just don't understand. I don't know where this money comes from. And I know, you know, pulling at our heartstrings is great, and it, you know, it helps fund certain things. But where are the people to pay these taxes, first of all?
Okay, well,
because they're leaving the state.
All right, Tim, let me let them respond. I appreciate the phone call. So he's saying, Eamon, first of all, where's the money going to come from? So let me let me work through this in this way. Let me start with this. What are lawmakers telling you? Is there money for this? Can they redirect priorities? Do you have anybody on board with this?
Yeah, I mean, like locally, Harry Bronson has been a very big advocate of fully funding CFE. You know, he's a local assemblyman here. And there are people that are on board with this idea because this is a moral right. This is not about saying that, well, okay, we're going to shift things here, that this is actually what these children deserve. And it is a matter of priorities. I mean, it's a massive state budget. We are going to spend tens of billions of dollars on many different things. But should we be spending that on tax cuts for the wealthy? Right now, the millionaire's tax is under review for whether or not that should be continued.
But maybe Tim will say, there's people already leaving the state. And more taxes on millionaires, more of them will leave the state. And then you've got a lower tax base. You don't buy that.
No, I think that this idea that all this, you know, capital is going to fly out is sort of disingenuous. And it pits us against each other. The idea should be that every child has a right to a sound basic education, and we're going to figure out everything we need to do to make that happen. And so if I have to choose between Jacarl and Juan and a millionaire, I'm going to pick Jacarl and Juan every day. I don't think that we should be held hostage to the wills of a very small minority. It should be about community building. And we all win in this scenario. We all win when we have stronger communities throughout New York State.
Let me ask you on regards to Assemblyman Bronson. He said he's on board. It's not necessarily your job to come up with, well, where are we going to cut from or how are we going to reprioritize? But has he indicated to you that he thinks that that is within reach, that we could do that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a matter of political will. You know, there are a lot of competing interests in Albany. There's a lot of things that money is spent on, often foolishly, and people will point to the budget and look at carve-outs for yachts and other things and helicopters into New York City. But, you know, where does basic right of public education come into this equation? And I don't think you have to be deeply ingrained in the Rochester community to see the severe challenges that we have here and really not to be morally outraged and say, well, what are we going to do to start investing in fixing this community?
Yeah, here's just one idea. And again, mm-hmm. I'm not taking a side. I'm just playing devil's advocate or having a thought experiment. How much? It would be $90 million more for the city of Rochester, right?
Right.
$90 million. How much more did Buffalo just get? Another $500 million from the governor?
I think that's right.
$500 million earmarked for Buffalo for more economic development. $500 million earmarked for economic development for the Rochester Finger Lakes region. They've spent $200 million. They've got $300 million left to go. So I understand what Tim and John are saying. If we're going to do this, you know, where does the money come from? It's a big budget, and the government spends a lot of money. And, you know, what you are saying is there's a choice. I also didn't take, Tim, I didn't take it personally, but I am going to say this. When you say, you know, you're tugging at our heartstrings with Juan's story and your brother's story and Jacarl and mm-hmm. your family's story, but Tim's saying the reality is we can't do it or it's to be very difficult. I don't think Tim's saying I don't want to hear those stories, but I do want you to hear those stories because they're real. These are real people. You know, Pia is telling her story as a parent, but Jacarl and Juan's story are unique in their own ways. And I think we have to consume these stories and understand that there are real people and real kids and real families involved. So what are we choosing? One quick note from Twitter. A listener says, I'm a former teacher. I would routinely use up to $1,000 of my own money to buy supplies for kids. Mm-hmm. I worked 70 hours a week. My union was not a mob. I am not a gangster. I'm absolutely appalled by that characterization. I worked hard and cared. I appreciate that. Thank you for the note. And listeners, again, if you want to call as we continue after our only break of the hour coming up here, you can call the program 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. I mentioned a couple of students. Jacarl Hill is a former student. He graduated from the RCSD, and he's a youth organizer at Teen Empowerment. Juan Callado is a student at Monroe BOCES. Pia Moeller is here, a parent of a student at School 53, a kindergartner. And Eamon Scanlon's the lead education organizer for Metro Justice and the Alliance for Quality Education in Rochester, New York. You're hearing their side of the story for why they are leading the People's March for Education Justice. That is this Saturday, March 4th. Starting at 2 p.m. at the Liberty Pole, and they want the state to come through with the foundation aid that's been promised for about a decade. They say these are the people who are impacted. So we'll get more of your comments after our only break of the hour on Connections. And let me tell you what's coming up Wednesday in Connections. We continue our series of Reshaping Rochester conversations. This month, the focus is on the benefits of urban agriculture. We'll talk to the leaders of an urban farm in Brooklyn about how they converted vacant lots, created jobs, and improved access to fresh food and how that might apply to Rochester. Then in our second hour, a local high school gearing up to stage a musical, an original musical, about confronting racial stereotypes. Ten Again was written by a local music teacher with Native American roots, and we will learn all about it. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Before we get back to your phone calls, during our very brief break there, Eamon Scanlon was just mentioning that we haven't brought up community schools yet. So why don't you start there, and I think all of our panelists have something to say on these various issues that we haven't even explored yet. But why community schools for you?
So Metro Justice has worked really closely with school number 9, which is Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. School on Clinton. And right now, they've been in the process of becoming what's called a community school, which is the idea of deep community engagement and meeting the community's needs through the school, making it a focal point. And we wanted to hold this up as a great model because that was only possible thanks to an infusion of money that was given by the state under receivership, because it was a receivership school. So right now, a lot of that money is being used to meet these basic needs that students have. And I was talking with the principal just the other day, and she was telling me how, you know, what do? We close the kids, we give them shelter, we give them food. It's very, very simple things that we take for granted, and that if we were investing in schools to create that wraparound, it could really protect that whole community, that whole group of students. For instance, they have a jobs training program there for parents, and just in the last couple of months, they've placed 10 parents in jobs. Like, this isn't just about a handout. This is an idea of making a self-sustaining community. They work with community partners to donate coats because, not this winter, but most winters, it's very cold, and a lot of these kids don't have those basic necessities, and to fund extra breakfast programs and treats for the students, because like Jakar was saying, many kids come in hungry and aren't able to learn without just, you know, having a full stomach, having a jacket on your back, you know, having a parent that has a job. And school number 9 in particular, 11% of the kids are homeless. So they work with the city to help place parents in housing, because when it's very unstable, that's another thing that limits your access to education.
11%?
11%.
1 out of 9 kids is technically homeless in that school.
They are. And that actually is a low number. It's varied. It's been as high as 15% at times.
Okay. Pia, I know, also said, hey, during the break, you know, there's a lot of good things to talk about as well here. What did we miss in the first half hour, Pia?
We missed several things. I think that we really have to counter this narrative about the district as something that's failing wholesale. It's simply not true. Obviously, we have huge challenges, and you know, some of we've already talked about in this program. But that doesn't mean that we don't also have some successful programs. We do. The school that my child goes to, School 53, the Montessori Academy, is a very successful school, and it has a pedagogy that really works with children. It's a hands-on pedagogy. We have a particularly prepared learning environment in which children learn on their own, you know, motivated by internal motivation, and supported by teachers in that environment. That's a program that really works. And I know that the city district is thinking about transforming more elementary schools into Montessori-style schools because it works. In addition to that, we have other programs that really work. We have one of the top 5 nationally ranked early childhood education programs, K-3 and K-4 programs. And that doesn't get a whole lot of talk in this town. It's a really high-quality program. Now, it needs to be expanded considerably. It doesn't reach everyone that it should reach, and we need to figure out how to fund the transportation needs of the parents who would be interested in placing their children there, and probably also do more outreach in terms of making people aware that the program exists, right? But that is another successful program to point to. And we have also, in addition to the Montessori, we have other alternative learning programs that have proven very successful and that are very attractive, including the sort of more expeditionary or inquiry-based kinds of learning that are practiced at the World of Inquiry School and the arts programming at School of the Arts. So I think we need to keep in mind that we actually have models that work, that are worth investing in and replicating in more schools.
That narrative, that failing schools narrative, drive you crazy a little bit?
It does, yeah.
Well, let me ask Jakarl then. You know, again, a graduate of the Rochester City School District. We've talked about your challenges. We've talked about your family's challenges and the challenges of your peers at times. But what are the best memories of school? What do you think made school a good place to be for you?
I would say certain teachers that actually wanted to be there, like who were like willing to take the extra mile for each student. I would definitely say when I was in early college, Tina Bianchi, she kind of paved the road for me to graduate early and gave me everything that I needed to do when she realized like I was, you know what I'm saying, capable of doing such things. And it was just like sometimes having like interactions, like certain things to do like outside of the school, like with people in the school, like well, it was limited field trips, but when we did have certain like incentives for when we did do good, like honor rolls and awards and shows and whatnot. And definitely when they gave us leadership roles, like when we had assemblies and they were hosted by us, you know what I'm saying, people could showcase talents and whatnot. So those things, like even those little things, like having shows and whatnot, those things like made you want to come to school. You know what I'm saying? It kind of like made the environment like positive. So like I would say those are my best memories when I was in high school.
And Jakarl, every school, every office, every place you go, you're going to have some people who work there who don't really want to be there every day, and you're going to have some who just are amazed. Amazing, right?
Indeed.
Do you look back now? I think you mentioned one or two names already. You look back and you can, in your own mind, have teachers who say, that person's amazing. That person helped pull me through the day some days. That person stepped up and did more than they had to, yes?
Yes, most definitely. Even the crazy thing is that the ISS supervisor, I forgot what her name is, but she was such a nice lady. Every time I went in there, sometimes I would leave class or go do work in there, she would tell like real lessons about life, just have like a full-blown conversation with you, you know what I'm saying, while helping you with your work. So like you were going to ISS because maybe you may have gotten into a situation or whatever, but while you're in there, it's not like you're staring at the wall, you're not doing nothing, you're all over the place, or you just sitting there angry. Mm-hmm. You're having a conversation that's like bringing positive vibes to you. So once you leave the class and then leave there and then go to your next class or wait till the next day to go back into all your classes, it was just like, maybe what I did wasn't good or whatever, but like I'm not gonna come in with a lot of negative energy. I got like a positive attitude now because now I see stuff in a different perspective. So it was definitely a lot of teachers that were like amazing.
Yeah, that's great. That's great to hear that. Well, Juan Callado mentioned also during the break, he's a high school student at Monroe Boces, and you know, you're concerned about criminalization, as you say, the school to prison pipeline, you know, and that if we don't see real equity addressed in funding, we're going to see more of that. Tell me your concerns about that one.
First, I'm thinking, like, the Rochester City School District don't have the same programs that the Suburban School have. Like, right now, you got East Rochester schools or other schools, like, out of the city, you see more vocational programs and stuff like that that motivate the students to go to school. Right now, here in the Rochester City School District, we don't have too much programs that motivate our students to come to our schools and be there. That's why we have a lot of students every day skipping classes and stuff like that. And when they go to school, they just go to ISS or OSS. Those students end getting kicked out of school, and later they end in prison. And this is part and process of the school-to-prison pipeline. We don't want those students to be in skipping classes or be in ISS or OSS because they don't feel comfortable. They don't feel that they're having the programs that they like. Example, I have a cousin in East Irondequoit High School. He got more programs than my brother had before in the Rochester City School District. He got more vocational programs than my brother. And that's the reason, too, that our students are getting kicked out because they go and they see that other people are having better programs than our district. And it doesn't mean because they're the servants, we are the city, we can be equal. That's why we ask for equity.
Mm-hmm. And actually, Juan, I think you talked before about how, you know, you had an issue with bullying back at East High School.
Yes.
And could you talk a little bit about how it was different between East and when you got to Boces?
Oh, sure. Before in East, I was being bullied by two different girls in East High School. Then the school didn't solve the problem in the way that they supposed to. They sent me to ISS, or I'm sorry, they sent the girls to ISS, me to OSS. And they are suspended. They didn't solve the problem at all. At Monroe Boces, I was being bullied by one kid. And he just didn't didn't like my accent at the beginning. That was what I was being bullied. They just called my mom. They just called his mom. My counselor, his counselor, me and him and the principal sit in a table. And we just talk about what was the problem and everything. And we solved the problem. The counselor helped. And that is something that in East High School we didn't have when I was in East High School before. And I can say the Monroe Bosis one solved the problem better than East. That's why we need more counselors and social workers. That is part of funding, too.
We got a phone call off air from Hillside just reminding us that their Reinvesting in Youth program offers bilingual case managers for kids through the ages 11 to 17 who need support. You can find info on their website, hillside.com, if you want to check that out. But what we're talking about here is just one slice in a broad range of needs. And if you're just joining us, this is a kind of an extension on our conversation last week, but I want to make sure everybody understands exactly what we're talking about. When we talk about Foundation Aid, we talk about school funding formulas. It goes back about a decade, and then you had this financial crash, and New York State, some say shortchanged, sort of changed that formula for a few years. Now a lot of lawmakers will say, well, we're on track. We dealt with that. We did the best we could. We're moving on. But schools say, look, the formula says we are way short on what we are morally owed, and the law says that we are owed about $170 million for Monroe County. More than half of that's for the Rochester City School District, if that money ever comes. You've got people like Assemblyman Harry Bronson saying, yes, we should do that. Other lawmakers saying, we've moved on, we can't afford it, we're doing our best now to fund it, to fund education as best we can. So what happens with that money? What would $90 million do? This is what I want to turn to Eamon Scanlon with next. Let's say that $90 million shows up on the door tomorrow, or whatever the formula is. Let's say they say, you know what? You're right. We're going to follow through on this. We're going to redirect some funds. We're going to reprioritize. That money's coming. $170 million for Monroe County, $90 million for the city of Rochester. How many schools are there in the Rochester City School District? Something like?
It's over 50, but I couldn't
50
tell
or 60,
you.
Right? I always think 50 or 60. Down, yeah. So it's not like every school would get $1.5 million or whatever it is. I mean, it would be divided among different needs. But if you missed it earlier this hour, what are the needs specifically in Rochester? Why does Rochester have a need for maybe more support than some wealthier suburban districts? Well, one's talking about class size, talking about helping students get the access to individual attention or just maybe more attention. So that's an issue. Jacarl talked about counselors. He talked about nutrition, kids showing up to school without meals. You know, you don't have to provide as many meals in Pittsford as you would in Rochester, things like that. That's just an example. Pia, a parent, talked about more after-school programs, particularly starting right around 2 o'clock, more diversity of activity to make school more enjoyable and attractive for kids, but also helping parents and support. That's a wide range, and that's just getting started. So how would you, what would happen with that $90 million realistically, Eamon?
So, and I kind of want to underscore this because one of the biggest problems the city school district has, and it's not really talked about, is instability. And instability in funding, enrollment, teachers, there's just a lot of problems. And so often many schools are funded through grants and various programs that sunset. They come and they go on these timelines. And there's a lot of back and forth time spent just securing grants, evaluating them, and then moving on to the next. And what's so great about Foundation Aid is it's operating aid. You can just use it to run your school. And if you have that and you can count on that, you're not always scrambling to find that extra counselor, to find that extra teacher, or to make sure that you have enough after-school programs. You can just fund them and they'll be there. So it's not so much a silver bullet as it is saying, let's just give them a stable footing from which to grow and to provide those very basic things like the community school model that they're trying to implement right now at school number 9.
When we look at what our various panelists have said the needs are, is the Foundation Aid enough to get, you know, to get us to where just about all those needs are met? Or do you think, you know, we're still a long way to go? Can we expect class sizes to change? Can we expect after-school programs to change? Can we expect nutrition, food, counselors, that kind of thing to be addressed?
I think if it's a long-term commitment, right? So it's different from the grant structure now where it's like everybody is guaranteed a certain floor of stability in funding. It's a lot easier to plan. It's a lot easier to build. But I think, Jacarl, did you want to say something? I feel bad over here.
Yeah. I'm going to say, also with the money that goes along hand in hand with it, are just, like I said, having people that want to do some of the things that are, like, proposed or, like, we feel like need to happen, like, mandatorily. Because a lot of times where if you're, like, given a choice in RCSD, a lot of times people just choose not to do things that should be done. And so I feel like some of those loose ends need to be tied to where people like have to do certain things, because even if they get the money and it's implemented and whatnot, like you gotta have some like advisors for certain extracurricular activities and clubs and whatnot, sports. So you gotta have people who willing to take lead in those things and within the schools, and like kind of like what was restorative practices, which we're trying to implement into like every school, basically with those counselors, like having a structure for those things to happen and be carried out in an effective way.
What Jakarl's talking about with restorative practices, by the way, I know we've talked about it before, but if it's still sort of new to you, let me be really reductive here. Think of it in some regards as a different way of discipline or dealing with problems. Yes, it takes more in the way of counselors, training, staff, but it also means fewer suspensions, fewer kids out of school, which means less, fewer kids dropping out of school, which means more kids graduating, which means better grades and opportunity. And there is a cascade of impacts from restorative practices that the research shows. I'm an evidence guy. I'm a research guy. What Jakarl's talking about is borne out by research, but it does take an investment on the front end to do it. And so we're going to see, again, what the priority is. I want to read an email from a listener named Marianne in Rochester. She says, Evan, for perspective, here's how the 1% in Manhattan educates their kids. She says, my daughter currently is a nanny on the Upper East Side of Manhattan for a 2.5-year-old boy. His parents are, quote, interviewing for private preschool for their son in the fall. Admission is very selective. There are often waiting lists for these preschools in Manhattan. Annual tuition for a 3-year-old routinely starts at $40,000. Such families probably could afford a small additional tax to contribute to public education. That's from Marianne. Is that too idealistic, or do you think that's realistic, Eamon?
I think that's very realistic. I think.
Are you Marianne in Rochester, Eamon? Did you just email me?
Yes, I'm not Marianne in Rochester. Okay, so let me see. But I think she speaks to a good point. And it's also, it's not just saying that, you know, we need more taxes. It's more about priorities and the way our tax structure is. You know, I don't want people to think that, oh, I want everybody out there to pay more in taxes. That's not the goal here. The goal here is to have a more equitable system and the right priorities in Albany. The money's there. It's a question of, are you going to spend it on some pet project, some tax cut carve out, or are you going to spend it on kids and their future? Like Juan and Jakarl here.
You mentioned Harry Brunson. Who else? So, with other lawmakers, who's disappointed you, Eamon?
I don't want to call everybody out. I mean, definitely the biggest obstacle will be the Republican state Senate. I think that unless, you know, our local state senators, Rich Funke, Joe Robach, and Razenhofer really step up and advocate for this, because a lot of the communities that they serve are affected by this, and this is really about bringing home the bacon for their voters, I don't think it's going to happen. So I would call out to them to really take leadership within their conference, because if this is going to happen, it needs a strong voice in the state Senate.
Okay. As we get ready to wrap the program, I know, Pio, you want to, you got plenty of time. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay, good. I just wanted to connect the issue of, you know, the concern about where is the funding going to come from, taxes and so forth, to the connection of the school-to-prison pipeline, because if we don't fully fund these schools, we know what some of the results are. They are the results that Jakarl and Juan have talked about. Right, that students end up on the street, and some of them will end up in the prison system, and that is much more costly. So, I mean, in addition to that being, for me at least, ethically indefensible, right, to let that happen, it is also economically just disadvantageous for the state to let that happen.
To some degree, I think these debates won't move unless one side learns to speak the language of the other. And when I say the other, I mean, often it's left-right on the political spectrum. And everybody, I think, has good intentions or wants good outcomes. I want to believe that. But often people, you know, you heard John Cullen earlier. He's conservative. He's concerned about taxes. He's concerned about feeling stretched. Pia's argument is, you started with, you know, for me, it's an ethical issue. But for John, it may be dollars and cents. And what you're saying to him is, this is actually a better deal for your tax dollars.
It definitely is.
Yeah. I mean, don't you think that has a better chance to make an impact?
It might. It doesn't mean, though, that I want to give up the ethical argument. I'd like to pair them.
No, part of my job, I study how you know, how minds change, if ever, and, you know, how people sort of interpret arguments. And, you know, Eamon, go ahead.
Yeah, and I think Pia brings up a good point, because I think we haven't really won this until people feel that moral obligation to every student in New York State, right? It shouldn't just be a convenient policy. It should be that we feel in our hearts that no matter what zip code you live in, you are guaranteed to the same right of a basic education.
Okay. And some final thoughts from you, Juan. What do you think's going to happen here? Are you an optimist?
I'm just thinking, like, if right now we receive that funding, we will be like, the school will be better. We can have smaller class sizes and stuff like that. But in one side, I'm really worried too about our Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos, that we're having right now running education. Then what can be her plans for public ed? Because right now, she never has been in public school. Her family always been rich. Then how she going to be managing our schools and what she got to do of our schools? Because we need the funding, but we need to know what the lady is going to do to our school, because public education is something that is very important for our kids right now. And if she can get her hand in it and probably do something that she can't, then she's not supposed to, she can destroy our public education, and that will be the worst thing here. But going back to funding, I would think that if with that funding, we will have more vocational programs, more small-sized classes, reduced tax, and we will have a lot of good stuff for our kids, and there will be more interest in school. That means then it will be reducing the school recruitment pipeline. Will go, like, the percent and numbers will go down and stuff like that.
Good luck to you. Thanks for being here, Warren. I appreciate it. Jacarl, good luck to you.
Thank you.
I just want to reiterate again, I mean, just how much I appreciate both of you coming in and sharing your personal experience. It's been great meeting you. Pia, good luck to you.
Thank you.
And your kindergartner, thanks for being here. Eamon Scanlon, tell everybody where to go on Saturday if they want to.
All right, so this Saturday, come out 2 p.m. to the Liberty Pole, downtown Rochester, if you really care about public education.
Well, you really just put it on people there. Thank you, Eamon. I appreciate the time. Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you have a great afternoon, and we will be right back with you at noon tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.